Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of our program, Dare to be Different. It's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 5048, and satellite Islam. Some of you are listening to us via the DSTV on the book 826, and we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest. But before we talk about our guest, the weather has been a bit topsy-turvy, couple of days hot and cold, and we haven't had any of our black frosts yet, and we haven't had any of the frost, so not too sure whether we should be or we would be getting that. And speaking to people in the last couple of weeks, everyone is saying, well, we haven't had a very cold winters yet. And this morning to help us is Arina, and Arina has been no stranger to Radio Islam. She's been with us on a number of occasions, and she has such wonderful insights and wonderful information to share with us. Hi, thank you very much for being with us, Arina.
Hello, Ismail. It's lovely to be with you today.
Thank you very much. And like I was saying, the weather, what's your take on weather, Arina?
This is the first year that everybody said to me, I was wrong. You know what? I said it's going to be a very cold winter, and it was nothing like butter winter. I think we're still going to have a little bit of cold splashes. There is a very big possibility of late cold, like in September. And I always say that you never ever see a spring coming before the 9th of September. 9th of September is always our last date of either a black frost or a last frost.
Yeah, having said that, I must say it's so true. You know, as growing up, we even had snow, you know, around about late September. So what you are saying is true.
Yes, that is right. And I think something like that will happen this year. Because we haven't had it before, and Cape Town haven't had their rain, and it's going to come. Sometime it has to come.
Well, you know, saying have to come, I don't know, but looking around, you know, I must say, driving in as I was coming to work, if you find all the peach blooms, trees are in bloom, you find the jasmines blooming, and, you know, it's sending such signals that, and some people's gardens, and in our case, our gardens haven't died down as yet.
Yeah. And also there is some of the birds, etc., that shows you that the season already started. And for the last week, every morning I'm smelling rain.
Wow.
Like I said, I don't know what is going on.
Well, smelling rain, let's hope it goes towards Cape Town more than comes here. I think they need it more than we do.
I really hope so, Ismail.
You know, having said all of that, Arina, you know, we're speaking about the weather, and I looked at some of the reports coming through. They say in Australia it has been the hottest winter in the last century of 105 years.
Yes.
And so there is something that's telling us that weather patterns have changed, and definitely something. There are those that say, no, there's no such thing as global warming. And others say, no, but this is definitely an indicator that global warming is a reality.
Global warming is a reality, but we must also know that weather did this type of thing through years and years. So I don't think it's a really new thing, but yes, we do have to think differently. We really have to think differently. But then there's the other side that I don't like. It's like with last year when we didn't have rain, everybody started planting aloes and all the plants that don't take a lot of water. Now, my question for them is, just after that we received this masses of water, and that plants can't take it. So they started having pests. So we must be very careful for just going to two different directions and not thinking that weather patterns do change. You know, you've got your El Nino, then you've got your La Nina. It won't stay just as an El Nino forever. So we can't just say, okay, I can only plant aloes now and no roses anymore.
I think that's so true, you know, because lots of us are saying, well, this is what happened, and now we're going to go into another type of garden, and we're going to go into a complete water-wise garden. And like you said, you know, history has informed us that we've gone through certain spells like this. You know, we've had periods where we had lots of rain, then we had periods where we had no rain, and then we've recovered. So there's a lot of those things happening.
Yeah. I think we must rather work with our soil and more working with mulches and getting the soil ready and working with your earthworm castings and your compost, etc. Rather concentrate on that and not throwing out roses or throwing out vegetables just because it's in a dry period, you know.
I do understand what where you're coming in from, but we have lots of people who are saying, but how are we going to do that? You know, we've had this period of dryness, and now we're wanting to come in, and it's, you know, we've had the rain, and we are a water scarce country. How are we going to blend the two together? What sort of indication, how can we take that forward?
The main thing is, you know, we can't say, okay, because of a rose that needs a lot of water, I'm gonna throw out roses now. Or I'm gonna throw out all flowering stuff now because they take too much water. I would rather say put more mulch on your soil, work more with mulch and work with more earthworms and earthworm castings because they're keeping the water in the soil. I had a look to my roses in the last few months and I started only giving them water once a week, but I put a lot of mulch on my soil and actually my roses can take much, much less water than we used to. Normally I gave them 25 liters a week. Now I'm taking them down to 10 liters a week, but they don't suffer more because of the mulch that I've got on my soil. So I don't think we have to go extreme. I think we must just work more by covering our soil.
Now, Irina, you've raised a very important question with regards to mulch, and everyone is saying that mulch is the way to go. Tell us about the mulch you've used and how has that been effective in your gardening environment?
You know what? The mulch that you use doesn't really matter what it is. It can be leaf mold. It can be old grass cuttings. It can be bark chips. Anything that you can get to put your hand on. It can also be straw. The thing is, we must get used to seeing this stuff in the garden. People are so used to have a beautiful forked up garden and the soil is lovely, you can eat from it. That is the wrong way to go. Rather cover your soil with at least a 5 to 10 centimeter layer of any mulch, even if it's straw, and get your eye used to looking to the straw. And what happens is the earthworms and the fungi and the bacteria growing underneath that mulch, they will actually feed your plant, so your plant will be much better fed, and also they keep the water in their bodies. So you don't have to use so much water. But we must get rid of open soil in our gardens. That is our biggest enemy.
You know, you've raised a very important point, and I know that I've been speaking about, you know, the old traditional way of gardening was to keep the garden, the soil pristine, pure. You raked it up and you made sure, like you said, you could actually eat from that soil. And we say no, take all that away and put in the straw or put in the grass cuttings or put in the leaf mold, whatever it is, and cover it. You've got to get used to it. It's got to be a natural thing. It's not something that's artificial. Now, the question that many people will be asking, but wouldn't that be distressed? For example, if you're going to use grass cuttings, is there a way to use those grass cuttings?
The most important thing is you can't put the green grass cutting that you've just cut, you can't put that on your garden. You have to put it somewhere for at least 2 weeks so that it can start breaking down and become brown before you use it in your garden. But then after it's brown, you can use it easily. Then it's just throw it on your garden. You know, there's another thing that I find is the biggest enemy in our garden, and that is the thing with the name fork. We all use a fork to open the soil and to have oxygen in the soil. I say a fork is something that you must sell for scrap metal and rather buy some compost with the money. Because the moment you put the fork in the soil, you kill all the microorganisms in that soil, and they actually the guys that keeps the water in their body. So I would rather say put your fork away and use your money and put mulch over your soil, even if it's old grass clippings. And if that grass clippings don't want to break down quickly, there's a lovely product on the market that you can buy from Pick and Pay or Spar or anywhere, and it's called molasses. Molasses you will find next to honey. Whenever you use molasses, a quarter cup on 10 liters of water, and you pour it over your grass clippings or over your leaf mold, it will start breaking it down. And then that mulch will start increasing the microbes in your soil. So it's a much better feed for your plants as well.
And what you are now advocating, and I've read an article, it's called the no-tilling. You know, I know farmers also seem to go in that particular direction where you go in and you don't till or you don't turn the soil with your fork. You leave it, and like you said, perhaps throw all the mulch, and then to break down the mulch, take this molasses so it speeds it up, and then you have the microbes and all the good hojas. And the good hojas, good insects coming in there, and that would enrich your soil. Is that correct?
That is precisely correct. You know, there's another thing that gardeners don't understand. They think if they want the plant to grow, they must give it fertilizer. And they all think that a plant can either eat or drink a fertilizer. Now, that is the biggest myth of gardening. The moment you put fertilizer on your soil, you need fungi and bacteria and earthworms to break it down for you before the plant can get hold of that fertilizer. So if you kill all your microbes in your soil with your fork, then there's nobody to eat the fertilizers that you've just put on the garden. So there's nobody to feed your plants. So it is impossible to get any fertilizer to your plant if there's no soil microbes. You have to have your soil microbes, and the more you have, the better your plant is going to be fed.
So what are you saying, Arina, that you don't put fertilizer on unless you have these microbes in your garden? Is that correct?
That is precisely what I mean. Otherwise, you just throw your money on the soil and it's going down the drain. It doesn't get to the plant.
So after you've mulched, would it be a good idea then to throw fertilizer, or is that mulch perhaps too thick because you've got a 5 to 10 centimeter layer of mulch? Would that be good? How would you do that? How would you mix the two?
How would you mix it? Mostly my mulch is always on my soil. So whenever I want to fertilize, I just put it over my mulch. And it will go into it and the microbes will take it into the soil for me. They start eating on that. So it's going down while I'm watering, and then also the organisms that's busy eating the mulch will start eating the fertilizer as well. And then after they've eaten it and they start dying off, then only does the fertilizer becomes an iron, and then only it is plant available.
So, you know, we're now looking at what we'd perhaps call an established garden, but we have many people who for the last season, you know, have come and winter's coming, they haven't done much to the soil, haven't done much gardening. What advice would you have for them? Because they haven't mulched, they haven't done fertilizer. What would you say? Where would they start?
Okay, for them to start, because most of the time they don't have any soil organisms in their soil. So I wouldn't say start by using fertilizer. I would say start by using earthworm castings. Put a small layer of earthworm castings around your soil. And only thereafter do you put some fertilizer on your soil. And then you put your mulch over it. That would be the best advice that I can give to them. And then there's also something else about fertilizer and earthworm castings that I find a lot of people are doing wrong. When they've got a rose and somebody tells them to put, let's say, half a handful of fertilizer over that rose, people are pouring it right over the rose, on top of the rose. And that is wrong. You burn your rose. I say these days to people, scatter your fertilizer and scatter your earthworm castings, meaning in a radius of 50 centimeters around your rose, you put your fertilizer, not on top of the rose. Otherwise, you will just start burning either the rose or you will start burning the organisms that's around the rose. So for people that's starting new, start by using earthworm castings. If you can't find any earthworm castings, go and find some, any product that's been made of chicken manure. There's lots of them on the market. It is all the Atlantic fertilizers. In the old days, we called it the bounce back. Nowadays, they call it Atlantic ocean. There's different products on the market that have been made from poultry manure. So you can just put them then on your soil and then you put your fertilizer and thereafter you put your mulch.
Okay. Now, let's say we're starting from the very beginning and we're wanting to start this new season. So once you put this earthworm castings or this poultry manure, how long thereafter would you then put in your fertilizer and your mulch? So does it happen all at one go? Or you first wait for the one to settle, then the second one and the third step? How would you suggest, Arina?
No, Ismail, you can do it at once. If you're going on Saturday to the nursery and you buy earthworm castings or the poultry manure and you buy your fertilizer, you can actually pour it on Saturday all on once and put your mulch over and it's finished for you for the rest of the month. So it can all be done in the same day. It doesn't really matter.
So now this is the soil preparation. We're not talking about the planting yet. We're just preparing the soil. So once we have a soil that we want and perhaps look at food security, we can plant our food or whether it's going to plant our aesthetic plants, whatever it is, we're now getting the soil prepared. So to get the earthworm castings, get the fertilizer, get the mulch, and then lay that, and then you wait for a couple of weeks before you get into your planting. Would that be right?
Yes, I normally wait about 2 to 4 weeks before I start planting anything new. Especially when I'm planting seedlings or vegetables, you know, they're very small. The root system can still burn them with the fertilizer. And also, if I put them into the soil now and the fertilizer is not available to them, they will stand without any food for the next 2 to 4 weeks. So it's better to do the fertilization now. Wait for about 2 to 4 weeks while you're watering the soil, and then only at the end of August do you plant your new plants. But I always tell people, please wait for the 9th of September for that maybe last cold that we're going to have.
Well, Arina, I hope, I don't know, should I say I hope you're right or you're wrong? I don't know what to say.
Well, I always hope I'm wrong, but sometimes it just comes. You must just take it as it comes. And for me, most important is rather have new growth that is strong than having growth that you didn't give any fertilizer to and it will get the cold. So with the one, you can have a problem with black frost, that part of your plant will die back. But when the cells are strong, at least it won't die back 100%. But if you leave the plants as they are and you don't fertilize now, and they will grow now in the next few weeks, and the black frost comes then you can lose the whole plant because the new growth is too soft. I would rather say fertilize now.
Irene, just one quick question coming through. Why is it so important for us to have this cold? What do you think would happen if we have the cold, and why is it important that we have the cold?
I didn't hear good again. Say again for me, please.
Sorry about that. I said, why is it important that we have this cold? What do you think would happen if we have the cold, and why do you want it to happen?
You know what? The reason why we do need the cold is to get rid of all the aphids and all the insects, but it's already too late. So even if we're going to have some colds at the 9th of September or whenever, it's not going to be enough. To have cold, to get rid of all your pests of the last season, you need night temperatures of 0 and minus 1 degrees at least, for at least a week. But I don't think we're going to have another week of 0 degrees. It's going to be one or two nights maybe, but not a week. So it's already too late to think that a cold winter will help us against all our diseases. We will have lots of diseases this year, and I'm talking about aphids and stuff that already started in the gardens because of the night temperatures that's so high. So to help people against fighting against that, I would say two of the most important fertilizers to put on your garden to help you fight against diseases is to put lime and phosphates on your garden, meaning you have to put bone meal on and you have to put agricultural lime on. If you have enough of that, you will find that you've got a stronger plant to fight all the diseases and pests.
So I do understand now that if we do not get the cold, we need to understand how to get rid of the aphids and the other hochas. And what you're suggesting is that we take lime, let's say agricultural lime and the phosphate, and you throw that onto your soil. Would that be right? Would you put it onto the soil? Like you prepare, as you prepared your earthworm castings and your mulch and your fertilizer, on that would you throw your lime and phosphate?
That's right, yes. I would rather use lime and bone meal as a fertilizer than going and buy any other fertilizer than 3-2-1 or 3-1-5, etc. Because the calcium and the phosphates in the lime and the bone meal helps you more against pests and diseases than any other NPK fertilizers could help you.
Thank you very much. We're just going to go for a short air break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm just tuning in. My name is Ismail Vriya. It's our program, Dare to be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, Mediumwave 1548, Satellite Islam, and on the DSTV bouquet 826. And we've got a wonderful guest here, Sarina, who's given us and always given us such wonderful information and insights. Some people may say, yes, it's very alternative, but I think it is something that definitely needs to be understood and worked with, because here we're working with nature, and Arina is giving us that breakdown. And we spoke about the increase of activity of the aphids and hochas, because we do not have the extreme cold, and Arina is going to help us with some of that. Hi, thank you very much, Arina. Let's go back again, and we're talking about the hochas, and you said it's better to use the lime, the agricultural lime, and the bone meal, as opposed to the fertilizer.
Yes, Ismail. I know I'm totally different than other people, but the reason is I studied on how to keep all your insects and your pests away from plants. And I found through my study that when you've got enough calcium in your plant, you will find that your plant will develop a much stronger hair root system. That is all the side roots that it grows. And when your plant got a strong hair root system, other minerals that is in your soil could also go up into the plant, meaning you've got a plant with a stronger immune system. So that's why I always tell my ladies to use, in the beginning of the season, to use lime and then also to use bone meal in their soil. Because bone meal is filled with phosphates, and phosphates also help your minerals to move up into your plant. So it moves to the leaves, it moves to the vegetable, it moves to the fruit, it moves to the flowers. And you will also find that a garden that receives bone meal in the beginning of the season is the garden that has more flowers in it than any other garden.
So the bone meal would help in the development of the flowers, would help in the development of the fruit and and the herbs as well.
That's right. Yes, and the vegetables as well. Yeah.
So I remember in the previous program you said to us this would also help us in the medicinal capabilities of these, because they would have far better minerals in these plants. Is that correct?
That is right, yeah. When your calcium and your phosphates is enough inside of your plant, you will find that plant will take in much more other minerals, trace elements and other minerals. It will take much more in from the soil. And when your plant receives more minerals from the soil, you will find that you've got a much better plant to eat, like specifically in your vegetables and your fruit. They will have more minerals inside of them. They will also have more organic acids inside of them. And then after a while, they will start developing a medicinal property. Like they will have bioflavonoids in them and all the organic acids that we need so that we don't get cancers from our food that we eat. I had a very interesting talk to a doctor a few days ago who said to me he couldn't understand why all his clients that was vegetarians, they all getting cancer these days. And he couldn't understand why it is, because they only eat vegetables and fruit. Well, how is it possible? And then I explained it to them. Is because we're busy eating vegetables and fruit that didn't go through a stage 4 of growth. It only went through a stage 1 of growth because we had too much pest and diseases to fight on the vegetable. So our vegetables doesn't have any medicinal properties these days. Because of that, they develop easy cancer in their bodies. So although years before we thought that vegetarians were people that is living the best,
mm-hmm.
Nowadays it's not the same anymore because we don't have enough minerals and microbes in our soil anymore.
Sorry, Nat, there's a question coming through. Let's just see if we can unpack this. So the first thing is to take the earthworm castings. And then to take the fertilizer and then the mulch, and where we're preparing the soil. Thereafter, we then take on the lime and the phosphate. Now, the question they're asking is, how much of lime and how much of phosphate do we put on? Is it a handful, or how do you prepare it, or is it prepared or something? What measurements do you have?
Right. You scatter it over your soil, and it's one handful per square meter of lime and one handful per square meter of bone meal. So you don't have to give to each plant a handful. You just scatter it per square meter of soil. And then you fine for the rest 6 months, and then you can do it again.
Oh, so it's a long period. You don't have to do it every... I beg your pardon, you don't have to do it every week. You've done it, then it's for 6 months. So it will take you then, basically it will take you through the whole season.
Yeah, it takes you through the whole season. I'm only feeding my garden twice a year. That's the only time I'm giving fertilizer.
Another question coming through, we have pots. How do we do it with pots? Pot plants. So we have all our vegetables perhaps in pots and our fruits in pots. Do we use the same application, or is it something different?
You know what? Your pot is normally smaller than a square meter in width. So I would say when it's a very small pot, let's say the pot is smaller than 20 centimeters in width, then I would say a teaspoonful of each. But if it's about 40 centimeters in width, I would say a dessert spoonful of each. Don't give too much. Just remember that any fertilizer that you're giving can become toxic if you give too much. So never give too much.
Okay, so let's go through. So would the pot plants also need the earthworm castings, the mulching fertilizer, and then go through the lime and the phosphate? Would that be the same?
That's it. Yes, it's precisely the same in a pot.
Okay, so we've got that out of the way. Now a question coming through. Oh, yes, someone's come. He's got a pomegranate plant that he wants to transplant.
Yes.
What would he do? Is it the right time? And how do you transplant that?
Yes, the pomegranate you can plant now. They're busy sprouting at this moment of time. Now, here again, I'm totally different than other people, Ismail. Normally, people say, make a hole of 1 by 1 meter and plant your plant in that big hole. Now, I don't need a grave to plant my plants in. And for me, a 1 by 1 meter hole is a grave. For me, the most important thing to remember, I must remember what is going to feed my plant and where are they. My microbes are only working on the top 15 centimeters of my soil. Now, if I put my fertilizer down at the bottom, 1 meter deep, and then plant my plant on top of that, it is impossible for my soil organisms to break down that fertilizer because they can't go down to a meter. They're only sitting at the top 15 centimeters of my soil. So what I am doing is when I plant any plant, I make a hole as big as my black bag. And I take my plant out of my black bag and put it into the hole with nothing in the hole. And then I put my fertilizer, my compost, my mulch, everything as we discussed it now, I put it on top after I've planted my plant. So everything goes on top of the soil. Nothing goes inside of the hole. That is where I'm totally different because I know that my microbes will take it down for me. But my microbes can't go and search it down 1 meter deep in the soil.
Okay, that makes sense. So you're not going to go down. These things will take it down by itself, the microbes. They won't go looking for it 1 meter down because it's almost impossible for them to find
it. They can't survive 1 meter down. They need oxygen, so they can't survive.
Another question, Arina. You know, Epsom salts and banana leaves. They say Epsom salts to, you know, put onto your plants and banana leaves to put at the bottom of perhaps your rose bushes and that. What is your take on that?
You know, Epsom salt in August is very good, specifically around your roses, your tomatoes, and all your acid-loving plants. But again, I will say only once, because Epsom salt is magnesium. And all the soil tests that I have done before showed me that the soil in Gauteng, the magnesium level is very, very high in Gauteng. So if I go and I put Epsom salt on top of my soil, let's say once a month or once every second month, I will end up with a very, very compacted soil because of my magnesium level that is too high in my soil. If you want to use magnesium or Epsom salt later in the season, rather spray it on the leaves of your plant, but not putting it on top of your soil. So only once in a year I would put it on top of my soil, but thereafter I would spray it on my leaves.
What about the banana leaves and that, you know, people normally put that saying that's also magnesium. For potassium, I beg your pardon, you know.
Yeah, it's more potassium.
Potassium, yes. And, you know, put it at the bottom of your rose plants.
Yes, and that is the banana peels.
That's
right.
Correct.
Yeah, there's potassium in, but there's also lots of other minerals in. I've got nothing against that. And another thing that I don't have anything against it is your eggs. To put all your eggshells in your soil because that's calcium and phosphate. So never ever throw your eggshells away. Always dry them out there somewhere in the sun and make a fine powder of them and sprinkle them over your plants. It is an excellent source of calcium and phosphate.
Thank you very much for that one. And questions with regards to citrus, you know, the citrus is coming to an end. What type of advice do you have? You know, you've given some of these natural, I would call them remedies or concoctions that you could. What could you do? What could you use for citrus?
You know, one of the best remedies that I have against any insects that you find in your garden is a remedy which I use on my vegetables as well as on my fruit. It's where you put 5 ml, it's a teaspoon, full of Scrubs ammonia. Now, Scrubs ammonia you can buy in Pick and Pay or Checkers or Spar. It is a cleansing product. 5 ml of Scrubs ammonia, and then you mix it with 15 ml of Epsom salt and 15 ml of your apple cider vinegar. And you mix that with 1 liter of water. And you spray it on the leaves of your plant whenever you have any insect on your plant. It helps to kill the insect, but it also helps the plant to turn its sugars into proteins, and proteins is actually a poison for any insect.
But then it wouldn't be harmful to humans to consume that fruit, would it?
No, it's good for humans.
Okay, so we've got that one. And that would be good for citrus and everything else, Arina?
Yes, you can use it on any tree, on any fruit, on any vegetable, on any rose. Doesn't matter which plant, even an inside plant you can use it on.
What about leaf curl? You know, many of the citruses, you know, bound to, with leaf curl coming up. Would this help with that as well?
When the leaf curl is a fungi, it won't help for that. Then you can use baking soda or bicarbonate of soda. But when you do have leaf curl as a fungi on your peach trees or your citrus trees, the reason why you do have it is because your plant can't get hold of enough minerals from the soil. So that person, I would rather advise him to put more bone meal and calcium on his soil to help him long term. Otherwise, the leaf curl will just come back and back and back always. It's because the plant couldn't get hold of mineralization, the minerals from the soil.
How would you take in the calcium and the bone meal? Would that be a particular way?
What I normally do to my fruit trees, like with my peach trees that do get the curl, is I put in the beginning of the season 1 cup of bone meal and 1 cup of lime, and I scatter it in a 50 centimeters radius around my tree. And then I put either compost or earthworm castings over it.
Thank you very much for that. And another question coming, you know, we're getting into it's the summer season, and it will soon be time for our summer fruits. What about figs? Is there anything that we could do for figs?
I couldn't hear your last question, Ismail.
I said we're coming to the summer season, and they're wanting to know, is there anything that we could do for a fig tree so that we get good fruit of the fig tree?
Good fruit on your fig tree. Very important, also lime and bone meal. Lime is a very important particle of a fig tree's fertilization. It's one of the little amount of fruit trees that likes a more alkaline soil. So I would use the same amount of lime and agricultural lime and bone meal on that. And one thing that I found from fig trees is they do like to be pruned. And the more you prune them, the more fruit you will have. So now is a little bit late to prune, but the first fruits is already there. But after your first fruiting, please prune your tree. They love it, and they make more fruit than growth.
We've got a couple of minutes. I don't know. You want to spend some time on the roses, the grass, or the summer vegetables? Which one can we look at?
Okay, let's look to the grass. People's grass outside there is very dry at this moment of time. Some people said to me this week, oh, there's lots of holes in my grass where the grass don't want to grow. And also some people said, I've got mole crickets and I've got ants on my grass. So there's lots of problems outside at this moment of time. And the first week of August is the week to start working on your grass. Now, the first thing you have to do is you have to cut your grass as low as possible. I want to see the dust in the air when you cut your grass. It's very important. Get rid of all the dead particles in your grass. And then there is three things that I would put on my grass to have a very green, lush grass for the next within 2 weeks. I've done it about 2 weeks ago. If you see my grass today, it is absolutely green within 2 weeks. What did I do? Number one, I scattered my grass. So I went through it and I took away all the dead parts. Then I went and I put some lime on my grass. And the next thing, I put some bone meal on my grass. And I've used 1 cup of each per square meter. And thereafter, I've used some compost, a very fine compost or topsoil, and I put that over it, and I've watered it in. And it's now 2 weeks later, and my grass is a dark, dark green at this moment of time.
Well, thank you very much. I think that is very, very interesting. Arina, unfortunately, we've run out of time. I know we're going to be chatting to you very soon again, some of the other questions that we haven't answered and some of the things that we have to still do. But thank you very much. You take care, and we'll be chatting to you in soon. Thanks, Arina.
Thank you very much, Esma. Bye.
And that is Arina Duvenoch, and she'll be the guest of the Garden Club. Well, it's taking place on the 12th of August at Lifestyle, 1:30 for 2. That's Arina Duvenoch. She'll be the guest speaker at the Garden Club meeting for August. You're all welcome. And for more information, you could contact Pam on 011-492-5617. 492-5617. That's all for me. Until we meet again. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.